If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Hello, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again for another really, you know, just info-packed episode of Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And my name is Rob Brake. And of course, here with me is Quentin D'Souza.
Hello.
Good morning. For me, it's morning. For you, it's not morning.
It's afternoon for me.
Yeah, I'm all good. I like it this way. But I tried to pack too much in this morning, Quentin. I was like at the gym, running around, doing calls, getting a shower, having breakfast. And like, I think I finished my breakfast just like 2 minutes ago before we jumped on the call. So I tried to cram too much in, and I don't like doing that. It's too stressful.
Hey, I do the same thing in the morning. I do 5K when I get up, and then I went to the gym, do another, 20 minutes on the treadmill, then an hour in the gym, then to get to the sauna for my sauna for 15, 20 minutes. And then I'm, doing my calls and all of that at the same time.
I forgot to mention I ran 6K actually. Sorry.
Oh, cool.
Before I went to the gym too. Yeah. I didn't do that actually. I didn't run at all, but I did go to the gym.
Yeah. This morning there is an announcement. The Bank of Canada cut the prime rate by a quarter point, which is good. This is the second drop. And I think it was like priced in 95%, today anyways. But there's a lot of predictions of another quarter point drop in September and then one in December. So between, 1% for the year and 1.5%, I've heard. So that would be interesting.
Oh, really? So neither of us may have to, or both of us might have to do burpees. How is that going to work?
I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, we only had the two choices. If it goes outside of that, then maybe we both lose, really, right?
Yeah, then we'll have to do burpees. That's okay. That'll be good for us.
Yeah. Everybody go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca, listen to the old shows, get in touch with all the guests that we've had on there. The show notes are there, all their links and everything in order to get in contact with people that we've had on the show in the past. And then go over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. I think if you haven't done that, that's the one call to action that I'd like to mention today is go over and leave us a rating and review. It helps a lot. And we've got, 400 or something? I can't remember. What was it?
Yeah, over 400 reviews for sure. And over a million downloads, which is really
over
cool.
A million and a half. Yeah. But who's counting, really?
Well, there's... You know what's good is that we can have conversation about what's happening in the market as well, right? And see what's going on. And like I'm seeing lots of changes, particularly I'm seeing some, like I haven't seen good deals in a while in the multifamily market. It's been because interest rates had gone up so fast and cap rates didn't really catch up, but I'm starting to see that more in the Ontario market where I'm focused. So I'm seeing, reality kind of kick in for sellers, and they're selling at higher cap rates, or meaning the numbers are look better. So that's been really good. Maybe the cap rate's gone up at least a quarter of a point, and sometimes
that's
half
like
a point.
What, in the GTA specifically?
I focus from, Pickering out to Cornwall and up to Midland. Our apartment buildings are, across that area. And, I've seen some cap rates go up by half a point, up to a point, a full percent. So that's a huge change. That's like a 25% change, right? In value in some of these properties.
But it's due because they're super low. Most like what are you looking at? Like roughly, let's say in those outer markets.
Right. It depends on the size of the building, but you could, before you might have seen like a 4 cap rate, and now you're seeing a 5 cap rate, which is a 20% drop in price, which actually starts to make sense when, if you can get, you know, a CMHC rate below 4% or at 4%, which is still a little challenging, but I have a feeling in the next couple months, it'll make, make for the case to get back into the market for myself. You know, I've kind of sat on the sidelines for the last year and a half. You know, we bought 25 buildings and, you know, we're at this point where, you know, like the numbers weren't penciling anymore, but now I'm seeing that the numbers are penciling again. And this, you know, the bond rates have come down quite a bit. You know, it was like over, you know, 4 and 4.15 in May, and it's come down to like 3.55. So that's, you know, there's some spread there. And depending on the size of the property that you're buying, you know, you can still, you can get a rate close to 4, which means if you're buying at a 5, you got a little bit of a spread, which is good. So, you know, lots of, I think, you know, from a transaction perspective, I think a lot of transactions happened before that, the capital rates, capital gains rate change in June. So you saw a lot of transactions happening, but I think it's going to normalize now because people are trying to get in before the capital gains change, like the capital gains rate went up for taxes.
Right.
And so people were trying to get in before that date to save a little bit of money on taxes, but that's kind of come and went. So now, you know, probably back into a little bit of, you know, regular type of, you know, market, but I'm finding that CMHC is getting a little slow again. I think just because there was a lot that kind of came in because there was another CMHC change in June. So I just find that there's a bit of a backup, but hopefully that'll clear out and we'll get to faster transaction times again. You know, that's what I'm hearing. I'm not a, just so everybody knows, I'm not a realtor in the market. I'm just an investor who is very interested in what's going on, because that's where I focus a lot, most of my net worth. And, you know, what I do every day is, you know, manage our, you know, 580 units. So it's,
and then I think with this announcement, the prices of single family homes, duplexes, whatever, like those type of properties is going to probably go up a little bit, right? We're going to see a more competitive market there.
We hope. I think that it's going to be a little bit of time because these interest rates have really messed up a lot of people. I've got, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I've got a friend of mine who's a builder, and some of the people aren't able to close on those properties that they bought 3 years ago. And, you know, there was a fire in one of the properties that was almost complete. And, you know, really what it is that people can't close on properties, and it's some scary stuff's happening, right?
Right.
And what I'm hearing is that, you know, there, and I'm not saying that it happens all the time, but when you see this type of market, people who can't close on it, or they have to bring $100,000 or more money to close, it may be better for them to try to delay closing. And, you know, so you never know what somebody's going to do.
So what's your advice, Quentin?
Don't burn down the house, please. Don't do any, I'm not advocating anything illegal. I'm just telling you what I'm hearing from like my builder friends who are doing some, you know, they do larger developments, like, you know, nationally known companies. And, you know, this is what I'm hearing off the cuff, that, you know, most of the time they're okay because those builders, they don't actually have they don't allow corporations to purchase properties. This is like for single family homes and stuff like that. Whereas in condos, they may allow corporations to take, you know, buy properties. And what happens with the corporations, which is a little different, is sometimes not that they're going to burn it down, but they may just not close on it, lose the deposit. And then the builder's kind of stuck with the property because it's a corporation. You have to go over the after the corporation. It might not be worth it, right? So
in other words, it's just a massive disaster, really.
There's going to be, like, I think the condo market in Toronto and Vancouver are very challenged. There's going to be a lot of builders who have product back in their hands, and a lot of product that's going to be I don't know. It, like, you'll have people that bought at a certain price range and then stuff come back on the market a lot less. And I'm not sure how they're going to be able to get mortgages and, you know, without putting more down. So it's going to be very interesting over the next, I think, 12 months, particularly, you know, the way that interest rates are. And there's some challenges in the market for sure.
Well, we've got someone in the background waiting that can probably talk pretty eloquently on this topic. And so let's get into it. Let's bring our guest on. Today, we have Sandro Ferreira, Sandro Canada on social media. And he's with us today, and he's going to share with us why investing in the U.S. should be an option for every Canadian real estate investor. Yes. So welcome. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, I am stoked and honored. Thank you for having me.
That's awesome. So Sandro is a Brazilian-Canadian entrepreneur, award-winning real estate investor, certified coach, public speaker, best-selling author, CEO of his real estate investment firm. He expanded his portfolio from 7 to over 100 properties in a year, focused on multifamily properties in Canada, the US, and Brazil, with a background in business and law, over 20 years in sales, customer experience, coaching, business development. His leadership is defined by innovation, risk-taking, and a visionary approach. He is a dynamic public speaker, inspires others, and his journey from a conventional career to become a successful entrepreneur highlights his determination and leadership.
Wow.
Welcome. Thank you.
Hey.
It's my honor. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. This is awesome.
No problem. And you know, just so people get a flavor for who you are, how did you get started in real estate investing?
I was almost out of a need. I remember when I immigrated to Canada in 2010, one of the greatest challenges I had at the time was to find a place to rent that was decent, right? Because again, coming from Brazil, not with a lot of money, I was sold on the Canadian dream. There's a whole different story, but I was sold on that dream. Never had put my feet in Canada before. And get here, and I learned right off the bat a massive difference. Canada want immigrants. Canadians, not necessarily, right? So that's that disconnect there. It was very difficult to find a house that was in a corner somewhere. Finally, I got it, and then I saw other friends coming. It's like, wow, this is interesting, because what I pay for rent is twice as much what I would pay in a mortgage back then in 2010. And that's how I saw an opportunity for the CRA to finance my first property. And that's how I started. I was working as self-employed for Bell. And this is a crazy story. And guys, just a disclaimer. I am not giving any advice here. Okay? This is just my personal experience. So go talk to your accountant, to your lawyer. But I was self-employed. You know, saving money, because I was like, hey, put money aside to pay your tax at the end of the year. And I was putting the money aside every payment. And then I saw this condo coming for sale. It's like, oh my goodness, I couldn't live in this condo, but I need to put 5% down. I didn't have the money. What did I do? Well, I took the CRA money, gave us a down payment and bought the condo. Now I filled my taxes. It's like, what is the money? Hey guys, I don't have the money I used. Can you split the payments? Then the CRA is like, yeah, send us 18 checks. That's how I got it started.
Very cool. And what, like, tell us a little bit about your backstory as well, because I'm interested, right? You came from Brazil.
Yes.
Right? So yeah. What prompted that? Like, tell us a little bit about your life growing up, and then what prompted you to come to Canada?
Yes. So growing up in Brazil, and I came from São Paulo, which is the largest city in the South Hemisphere, and very dynamic city. But I grew up in the hood, like hood. And growing up in the hood, you don't see, like, the vast majority of kids, they look like me. The black population is fun, because here in Canada, when you talk to people, I'm Brazilian, even educated people, they tell me, oh, I didn't realize that Brazil had, like, people of colors. Like, oh, we are 60% of the population, right? But you don't see that on TV. You don't see, like, the professionals that immigrate. You don't see them. So I'm sort of like an outsider. But I saw through education my way out. And as I was trying to climb the ladder, I saw less and less people looking like me. Now, I went to law school, so I was like my mid-20s as a lawyer. And people would say, oh, either soccer player or a singer. It's like, no, I'm a lawyer. Wow, do you do criminal law? which is the typical stereotype, right? Yeah. And I wasn't happy in how my life was going because I never really fit into that box. And a good friend of mine traveled the world over 60 countries. And he always told me, if I leave Brazil one day, I would live in Canada. I said, why Canada? Well, I like the way that things are there. And finally, he invited me to go to a presentation about the embassy selling the Canadian dream. I went there and I'm like, oh my goodness, I was born to be Canadian. Then I started the immigration process. Now, I say this, a lot of challenges, a lot of ups and downs. And I immigrated 14 years ago. I never woke up. There's not a single day that I woke up asking myself, should I have stayed in Brazil? Of course, when the winter comes, sucks. And I can't wait for the day that I'm leaving summer to summer. But what really motivated me to come to Canada is that allegedly was a more equal in terms of opportunities for people from our backgrounds and nations, right? So that was my primary motivation to come to Canada. Now, getting here, you see, and then now being here 14 years, I see a certain complacency of individuals in general, because the government is too giving, the life is too easy here in Canada. And people talk about struggle. Guys, this is kindergarten compared to what struggle means coming from where I came from, right? Yeah. Now, that's the side that I'm like, guys, come on, wake up, let's go. But then we can either see this and get into the complacency and get inside of their box, or see as an opportunity to then build something that is meaningful and leave a legacy behind.
Yeah, you know, and I think that a lot of new immigrants, you know, our family the same, you know, coming to Canada, it's fairly frequent within the immigrant story for people to say, you know, work really hard because you're coming from something that you can compare it to. And you say, this is really an opportunity that we have. Let's make the best of it. Whereas sometimes you see people who've been here for a generation or two, they're just, you know, they're just not as motivated. And I hate to say it because it is really, they've been given a lot and they don't realize it because they have nothing to compare it against or to, right? And that I think is a challenge. And people need to, I think, travel the world a little bit more to see that, to be able to experience that and know, you know, that struggle that is out there. And, you know, that way you appreciate it more. And then the opportunities. So you've come from some really big challenges, right? You know, from where you are, if you're coming from, you know, from São Paulo and you come from the hood down there, like there's some serious challenges, right? And so you've overcome those to first of all, to become a lawyer and then to come to Canada. What was in your head that helped you to do that? How did you make the breakthrough?
Well, that's a very good question, because growing up, I remember when I was 16 years old, I got on a scholarship to go to the U.S. to do my high school. And my mom said no, because again, I was 16, I was a minor, and my mom needed to sign. My dad had to sign. My mom said, no, you're not going to go. That, for instance, my mom, this opportunity can change my life. It's like, no, you are under my responsibility. And no, you're not going. So then I told her, one day I will be the owner of my own nose and I'm going to live overseas. So the first thing was motivated by that vengeance to tell my mom that I can leave Brazil and live whenever I want. Like, wrong motivation, but that's where it started. And then second of all is that when you come from a place where you don't really have a middle class, you either have that small group of ultra rich individuals, and then the massive conglomerate of poor people. And the middle class, they are just getting by, right? And it's funny because in Brazil, then in the middle class, you have classifications. Class A, class B, and like upper middle class, middle class, and lower middle class. It's so weird. And then looking to Canada, well, we have a small group of individuals that are very rich. We have poor, but the country is massively this middle class environment, even though here we don't realize that, but it is compared to what we see out there. So then for me it was that I can go to a place and I can be a lawyer and do well. I can be a plumber and do well. I can be a satellite technician and still do well. And that's how I got my first job working for Bell. And blew my mind when I would go to these massive houses in the countryside of Ottawa and Gatineau in the national capital. It's like these beautiful, massive houses, those trucks. Like, what do you guys do? Oh, I'm an electrician. I'm a carpenter. I'm a builder. Like, those are the guys living the nicest houses. And you know, of course, would have all the lawyer, the judge, the doctor. But actually, the guys having a better life, they're not the doctors, because the doctors, they're stuck in some emergency room out there. And this guy, so that was something that was a huge shift in my mindset, understand that I could literally choose any career and still be able to build a nice life.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you know, with the ability to kind of see that and get those sorts of insights, that's really interesting. And so you built a Canadian portfolio. Can you describe what does your Canadian portfolio look like, or how, what did it look like?
It's a bittersweet experience because, so 2019, let's fast forward, right? I got my condo, but let's like fast forward 2019. 2019, we had the beginning of COVID. And I was working at that time on sales for one of the largest HVAC companies in the country as a salesman. And I was doing extremely well from my perspective, right? Making six figures income, and I was doing well. But then once we couldn't go anywhere and all the lockdowns, I couldn't go to anybody's house to sell an HVAC, to sell an air conditioner or a furnace. I always been interested in real estate and always thought, what I like about the real estate, it doesn't matter your color of your skin, it doesn't matter your background, it doesn't matter if you even know how to read. As long as you can do 1 + 1 = 2, you can get started in real estate. It's that simple compared to, for example, stock markets or the crypto market or, you know, stock options. It's so much more complex. And I've been reading Poor Dad, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like the classic, and Money Sense and all these things. And then these guys from Windsor, they came with a big bang on social media, and we are launching the first ever digital workshop about real estate investing. It was a full weekend, and I attended. And then I hear these guys talking about rent to own and flip to yourself, BRRRS, OPM. Like, what?
All these new terms, right?
These guys being hiding, right? And these guys, even though that community doesn't exist anymore, but that was very disruptive. And then I'm like, I like this, being on sales. I came in, and I came in on hot. And then I met another individual from Ottawa that connected me to a guy from Ottawa that is an investor for over 25 years. And then once I learned, I'm like, I can actually build a portfolio using other people's money, using creative financing, using agreement for sale. Oh my goodness, using VTBs. And then I made a mistake. I went crazy, like crazy. I went crazy.
No, oh, you did a lot of deals in a short amount of time.
Yes.
How many did you do in your first year?
I did over 134 doors. So I already had 7 doors, which was like 2 properties with a total of 7 doors. And I ramped it up from 7 to 134 in 1 year.
What type of properties were they? Were they flip properties, rental homes, assignments?
I was focused on the buy and hold, right? So I did New Brunswick. So there's like 20-plex, a 7-plex, an 8-plex. And then in Ottawa, a 20-plex, 7-plex, 6-plex. And then Saskatchewan in Saskatchewan. In Saskatoon, we did a 15 doors. And then in Cleveland, Ohio, 38 doors.
You started into the States right away too.
Yes. Now, what was the mistake? And why I say today, I can't change the past.
Yikes.
The past is done, right?
Yeah. So what happened? What happened? Because I can, like, just by how you're telling me, OPM, leverage, the scale that you have, I can tell there's some big story that's coming.
Oh, my goodness. Now, of course, when you go to stage and I build a portfolio and I went $7 and I build an 8-figure portfolio. But then, of course,
this that's it. I can show you how.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And then people come like, oh, my goodness, 8 figures. Yeah. In 1 year, I bought $18 million worth in real estate. Wow, you are a hero. But the question that nobody's asking, okay, Sandra, how much money are you bringing home? Number one. Number two. Okay, but what is the debt that you're accruing?
That's right.
What happened to you once the government changed the monetary policies? Yeah. That's the question that people don't ask. And people don't want to have these conversations.
Yeah, but I do, because I think it's important for people to learn.
It's very important.
This is the most important thing that people need to hear. Thank you for bringing that up, Sandra. Yes. That's amazing.
And I'm an open book, right? Of course, there are some people in my corner advising me. No, you don't, like, Sandra, just be careful. You shouldn't be advertising your flaws. Focus on your wins. Like, but listen, if I keep doing this, I'm going to have other Sandros out there that are action takers, that are motivated, but they're going to have the wrong advice. So what changed for me is that I, through social media, connected a very high-profile entrepreneur in Ottawa. And it's like, Sandra, you have a very intriguing story. I would love to meet for coffee. It's like, so when a billionaire say that you want to meet for coffee, you drop out, you go hear the guy, right? Yeah. So I married him, and then we start building a relationship. And I asked him, hey, you are 20 years older than I am. If you couldn't give an advice to your younger self, what would you say? He said, well, I'm not going to give an advice to my younger self. I'm going to give my advice to you. Focus, number one, cash flow. Because if you build the cash flow, no matter what happens in the economy, your standards of living, your like basic needs are met. Then you go for the lifestyle. If you want the car, if you want the trip, you want the hotel, whatever it looks like as a lifestyle, you have the cash flow saved. And then now I have the cash flow figured out and I have the lifestyle figured out. Okay, now I can go for the home runs. Now I can focus on the generational wealth. Now I can focus on the legacy. But my lack of awareness, as per se, was to go all the way towards generational wealth without establishing a strong cash flow in a lifestyle first. And then it burned myself. Now, great advice, but it came too late in my journey.
Right. So in 2019, you're really scaling. How are you acquiring them? Are you using like prom notes? Are you doing just private lending? How are you able to like, are you using joint venture partnerships? How are you building the portfolio?
Yeah, so 2020, because I joined this community in 2019, graduated in 2020, and then I went in that buying spree. So 2020, I did a lot of pinotes, right? And especially when you come and you're doing the action and the market is hot and everybody's excited, people are throwing money at you. Even if they want, hey, I have money, take my money. I don't want your money. No, take my money, right? So that happened. And then when the market started shifting, I kept buying because now it's like, oh, I have a problem. How I solve? Well, buy more to then get more equity to solve this first problem. It just became a mess. But then I start focusing on the VTBs and the agreement for sales, right? And then I bought a handful of properties using creative financing. And on the capital side, P-notes, JVs, JPLP structures, and then, of course, private lending. I literally would learn the strategy and apply immediately. It works. When you're learning and apply, it works. Now, what I would say to my younger self or to the Sandro 4 years ago, it's like, why are you buying properties all across Canada without a clear strategy just for the sake of buying doors? Makes no sense. Number two, buying markets that you know have a lower cap rate than the rest because then you have more, like you have multiple exits.
Yeah,
and I'm saying this. We bought this 20 unit in New Brunswick. Okay. Oh, not going to even talk about the 20 units.
Wait. Okay. So let's say what did you buy it for, the 20 unit?
We or bought a 20 unit in a small town of 5,000 people. We bought this 20 unit for $440,000.
Okay.
Okay. The goal there was to do a full bar.
Yeah.
We raised the full $440,000 plus $200,000 for the renovations.
Yeah.
We did the renovations, tenant turnaround, raise the rents, as the book, everything by the book. And then now we have a higher rent, so we have a better net
NOI
income, a better NOI. The cap rates are decent. Let's try CMHC. We apply for CMHC, get an email that they are issuing the certificate, and that week, CMHC changes its policies.
Yeah.
But then...
Oh, VTBs, because they didn't allow the seller financing component and private lending.
Cash.
Yeah, private. Oh, cash.
We raised the capital privately.
Yeah.
Did the whole work, but then we say, wow, do you have a mortgage from a
approved lender?
Yeah. A lender? No, this bought outright. Okay, so no, we're not going to do it. Became a challenge. Now, another great challenge, St. John, which is a decent market compared to Grand Falls. But I bought a sevenplex in St. John for $750. And in 8 months, we did the full bar. Then we go to a credit union. They give us the mortgage. After you complete the work, go back. Now we want to refinance. Pay out the investors. But at this point, CMHC already changed their guidelines. So all the credit unions, they start following CMHC guidelines. And now, when I first financed, I was the guarantor of the project. Yeah. Then to time to refinance, they sent their appraiser. So we sent our appraiser, and they appraised at 1.57.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's too much. You bought for 1.5. How come is you bought for 750? How much? How come it's 1.7? We're gonna send another appraiser. So the credit union sent their own appraiser, and in the meantime, we had two units that are vacant, and we rented for like a very good pricing. So that also impacted the NOI. The appraisal came back at 1.725. So then they decide, oh no, you don't have enough experience. In 8 months, this is ridiculous. Then you go from a 750 to 1.7. No. And then I got to show me the 3 years that you know how to do this. Oh my goodness, became a nightmare, right? Now, if I was in a bigger market where the cap rate is lower, so this strategy would work
because yes, the market. Absolutely, 100%.
Not in a Grand Falls or St. John or Saskatoon, right? Yeah. But again, I had no idea. So I learned on the hard way.
So now this is where the learning, now how you reacted to that is important too. So, you know, how did you handle not getting the CMHC? Because you know the value is there in both buildings. You know that, but you still have you have a lot of leverage on these assets. What did you do? Did you just go private again? Both of those assets you did private again.
Well, so the building in Grand Falls, we already bought up like outright with investors. So basically, I mean, hey, Mr. Investor, I promised I was going to give all your capital back, but I can't because I'm not getting the finances to CMHC. You got to wait a little longer. And then I start chopping up. So we went back to new investors to replace the first group of investors. And then we went to private lending through a MIC to then exit the second group of individuals. And then the people that remain on the deal, they have about 35% left. But the challenge is that with the changes, so for example, I invested my personal capital in this deal. Yeah. And the goal was, I put a second mortgage on my home to be able to put the funds there. And now when I get the funds back, instead of paying that second mortgage on my home, I'm using this capital just to get by because everything changed. So then I became this maze. I would say the greatest challenge for me in this season is not losing my sleep because of the size of the challenge, but it's answering the phones in the morning. And it's almost like this. You don't hear from anybody, and then one day, everybody decides to call you the same day. And it's crazy because now I have two options. I either hide and I don't answer anybody, the problems aren't going away, and I got to show up no matter how I feel. I got to come and show up. Hey, yes, Mr. John Doe, I know, I am sorry. You see what's happening? This and that, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to do this and that. I understand it's all right, but this is the reality, right? So this is the greatest challenge, is going through the emotional toughness that this type of environment promotes.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great. And how many promissory notes do you think that you had in like private mortgages did you have at the time?
Yeah, so right now, promissory notes, I have 5 promissory notes. And then I have individuals that invested using registered funds as well, which is a challenge there itself. So there's about 5 or 6. And then mortgages with the magentas and the league savings. Those are the sharky ones because it's easy to get in, but it's very difficult to get out.
Lots of fees.
Lots of fees, yes. Yeah.
So what's your plan? Like, what is your plan to get out of this? Are you going to sell off some assets, or are you trying to keep everything and find different ways of being able to do that? Is there new options that have opened up now for you?
And one of the challenges is the market today, because people aren't buying properties, multifamily properties, like they were 3 years ago. The market is totally different, right?
So a few things are happening, right? And again, very good conversation, very good questions, because you got to keep going, yep. Right? And again, as I said right at the beginning of our conversation, I can't change the past. Now, I'm very proud of the fact that this dude came out of nowhere with no solid education in real estate and was able to build such a sizable portfolio. The greatest thing is that I've learned how to do it. And this here, nobody can take away. Like, nobody, right? Now, yes, I'm losing some properties. I had to sell two properties. A massive loss for me, like massive loss, just to get rid of the challenge and keep going. So I'm repositioning, try to reposition some of the assets, trying to bring some new investors or people with a different perspective, some creativity, trying to save. I had one property, 20 unit in auto, that I had to do a cash call. This is a very difficult conversation to have with investors when, hey, you sign a JV agreement. It's like a marriage, for the good and for the worth. But then when you come, hey, guys, I'm $7,000 short a month just to cover the mortgage. Nobody wants to have that conversation, right? But I'll say this. I do know some investors that they filed for bankruptcy. I know some investors that they did credit proposals. I am a fighter. And I die in the battle, but I don't give up. I keep on going. I keep on fighting. Now, yeah, but Sandra, say they'll keep on fighting. That doesn't do anything. What are your actionable steps that you are taking in order to solve these problems? Number one, having honest conversations with the individuals that are involved. Some understand, some don't, but it's just part of the reality. Number one. Number two, trying to have conversations with the lenders. And there's even one lender that I was straight up. I'm here, I'm going to give you the key back, or we work together. And then another one, which was supposed to be a major challenge, I was able to convince the sellers to convert the whole thing into a seller's financing. And we converted that project into 100% VTB property with the $1,000 deposit and 5% interest for 4 years and a 20 years amortization. So, I mean, you got to get creative. Now, how do you get creative if you don't know what you're doing? Well, connected guys like you guys that know what you're doing. It's like, hey, dude, you should have this conversation before. I know, but I couldn't. What I do now? And having these honest conversations, that hurts. And hey, guys, I will say this. And the reason I'm saying this is because I might have some Sandra out there listening to this call. Throw your freaking reputation out of the window, out of the door. Now, I'm not telling you to go screw people over, but just take your ego and flush in the toilet, okay? Because you are trying to impress people. And again, guys, I'm like, it sounds good. I build 8-figure portfolio. That sounds good, but means nothing if I'm starving, if I'm breaking. So I gotta have that humility and be humble enough to say, I screwed up. I didn't listen to my wife. My marriage is in jeopardy big time because of it. Like, everything is a consequence, right? So don't wait until that point. Ask for help and be open to get some spank and get some tough love. It hurts, but may help some other individuals out there to not get in this type of troubles. And now, I have a very high risk tolerance. So for me, it's just, okay, let's go. Another day, another fight.
But if you were going to go back and do it again, what would you change? Like, how would you have scaled from the beginning if that was?
Yes. Wow. I love this question because I am at that predicament. And that's how the US came along, right? When I'm talking to individuals that they say, hey, I'm trying to get into real estate, I ask this question first. Where are you at in life? Do you have a job, or you have a pension, or you have some cushion that pays all your living expenses? Oh, no. Most people, especially the one that be investors, oh, I want to quit my job. I want to make $10,000 a month from real estate. Passive. There's no such thing as passive to start with. But what I'm trying to do and say is, like, for starting today, How is my cash flow? Is it inexistent? Okay, so I gotta focus on cash flow first. Is it possible to cash flow in Ottawa or in Ontario in a major market? Very unlikely. It is possible, but not to give you the ability to quit your job, for example, or to pay the expenses. Go to the Atlantics or go in Western Canada. Well, yes, but then you may not have the equity to support. So you got to get initial cash to come in. So then how about the U.S.? Yes, there are markets in the U.S. that you're going to see the appreciation are shy compared to Ontario, but you're going to get the solid cash flow. And with the same amount of money, you can create that autopilot for your bills. The number two, okay, I want to get the lifestyle. What's the lifestyle? I want to drive a nicer car. I want to dress certain clothes. Okay, so then I start looking into not buying road only, but do some flips, doing some bars, that I get that lump sum, right, throughout the property that I can get these toys. And then say, wow, but I also want to take care of my kids and the kids of my kids. So then for me, instead of being looking in the U.S., which is a fantastic opportunity, but then for generational wealth, long run, Ontario, for me, is what makes sense. Because historically, when I look back the past 80 years, the appreciation is always there. An average of 4 to 4.5% historically, year after year after year after year. And that's why I like Ontario for that aspect. So I'm basically changing. Instead of going for the home run, start the cash flow, take care of the lifestyle, and then generational wealth through home runs.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you've separated it out into different areas. So you're saying that in the U.S., you're focused in cash flow and appreciation, but in Ontario, you're focused more on appreciation. And then in other markets in Canada, you kind of split it between appreciation and cash flow. Is there other pros and cons for investing in the U.S. that you yes. see as out there?
Yes, you can't just be a wannabe investor, right? And again, I disclaimer, I have nothing against any program. Everybody have their own strategy that works for them. But what I see is this one guy goes to a specific market and tries something, works, and then he starts advertising. I came to this market, I'm the king of this market. And then the flocks, everybody start coming, following that. The challenge is that, first of all, we got to have an accountant and a lawyer that understands the cross-border tax implications, because they're going to have an impact. Number one. Number two, well, if we think that we can find some crooks in Canada, in the U.S., it's the land of crooks.
10 times.
Right? 10 times. Like
100 times, maybe. Yeah.
And then having a powerful team, you got to know who you are working with. You got to know. And even if you know, you can get screwed. So that's a big, big challenge. And that's what I would say. Well, again, going back to the question, but Sandra, if I'm starting today, I want to get started. Well, can I partner with somebody that already did the, like, talk? It's not just talk the talk, but walk the walk. And I can partner with to learn. Get a small project here. Where do you live? I live in Ontario. Do here. Learn. And then apply. Now then I move down south to get that equity. Now, one thing that you said, or other markets, again, if I was doing everything that I did starting today, I would not even touch New Brunswick and Saskatoon. Why not? I never even been there. I don't know what it looks like, unless I'm trying to concentrate most of our investment in these markets, right? Being just all over the place without any strategy, it was just a dumb
Well, there must have been something like that prompted you to do that. Like who brought you those opportunities, and how did you evaluate them in the first place?
Well, you run the numbers. And again, when I talk, so for example, if I talk to an individual that have like $500, like you, Quentin, that been doing this for a long time, I'm assuming that you're very pragmatic about the numbers. Now, when you are a new investor like me, you compromise in certain metrics just because the deal makes sense. I mean, the guy's giving me 80% VTB. If I squeeze it over a little bit, it's going to give me 90% VTB. I mean, this is too good to be true. And then I get somebody with $100,000 here. Hey, I want to invest with you. That's, I'm going to do it. Now, What is the challenge with that? That at the time, I wasn't as concerned about the exits because everything was making sense. The market kept going up. And if I'm conservative, instead of running my numbers at 5% or 6% cash on cash, I go a little lower, 4% cash on cash. And this, the numbers to work, oh, if I get 8% cash on cash, everybody's laughing. This is where we were. Now, with the market shift, what I see happening is that the guys that still stick to their 3 to 4, 4.5% cash on cash analysis, they are the ones that are still thriving. And the ones that, yes, at 5% it doesn't work, but if I squeeze a little bit, it works because the markets continue to go. That was the greatest mistake, which I didn't know was a mistake at the time, right? I learned this until when the market changed. And when you are so eager to prove to your group of other investors that you belong, you do stupid things.
Yeah, that's the ego. That's why you were saying before, the whole ego. Same thing. Like,
especially when you start to get that reputation as the guy that's building it. And you're like, yeah, well, we can't still, you know, how do we slow this down? Then I won't be that guy.
You have to, definitely have to watch out. I get that sometimes too with like where I'm focusing. I focus in Ontario, but I focus on specific corridors. You send me people send me stuff from Guelph and London, 50 units here, there. I don't even look at it because that's not where I'm focused. You're not going to deter me from what my focus is because that's where I have my team, where everything makes sense. And like when I'm underwriting a deal, you're right, I'm looking at the numbers and I'm being more pragmatic. I want to make sure I cash flow and can carry that asset for 5 years, right? I don't want to have to do cash calls every year because of the asset. So it's really about learning your own mistakes as you go along. And you're right, you know, you can't have an ego about that. You just have to learn from it and make sure that you move on and that, you know, that you really focus. Now, you are in, you're buying in other markets around the US. And I'm gonna kind of put you on the spot here a little bit. Are you just replicating the same thing you did in Canada by going into too many markets? How are you changing that?
So again, the assets that I already bought in the US, they're already there.
Was it at the same time as Canada?
At the same time.
Okay, gotcha.
Now,
okay.
What I've done differently, what I've been doing, especially this year, I completely stopped the acquisition. So no more acquisitions. And then that's when Dahlia, personally, I reached out to her with one challenge. And then she was asking me the questions. And then she said, Sandra, I want to meet with you in person. And I came to the meeting like so happy. And it's like, okay, so you are going through all of this, but you are behaving like this. How is that even possible? It doesn't match. Because you should be crawling in the corner with your thumbs in your mouth crying. It's like, well, because here's the thing. I can't change the past. I can be hopeful about the future. So I'm going to keep going. And then she invited me to join her initiative. And then for me, of course, the capital aspect counts. But for me, it's more like the opportunity to continue to educate other Sandras out there to not commit the same mistakes that I did. Then the guys, Sandra, I want to buy a property here. I found this property right there in Ottawa. I know it's super expensive, but they're giving 110% VTB. And then I ask the question, okay, great, but how are we going to exit? keep it out. Don't do that. I did that and it hurts. But why you don't look, instead of getting that $200,000 you have and put in the down payment that you're going to lose, guaranteed, why you don't look at an asset in the U.S.? Let's say, like, not the top primary markets like New York, for example, or LA. So I'm focused more on the East Coast. And then I'm looking to these markets where you have the cash flow, you have some appreciation that is not crazy, like 7-8%, but you have like 4% average to help individuals get started. But then they also have to have done something here. And I highly discourage individuals that never bought anything, not even a garage. I want to buy a multifamily in the US. Okay, who's your team? Oh, I'm going to get to the community. You know the community of real estate investors? I'm going to go there to raise capital. It's like, okay, you're not my client. And that's what I've been doing. So my focus now is to help individuals that are already doing things here and they have some equity, but that are struggling. So then you can get, let's say, a equity lender and access some capital to then reposition in the US, like in a burst strategy, for example,
right,
to then balance things out.
So So those, are you helping people to do like a GPLP on a larger building or buy like individual, like single family home duplexes type thing? Or is it just all together?
So it depends on the focus of the investor, right? Okay. So if you say, Sandra, I have a portfolio of 700 million that I need to refinance. Can you look into it? Yes, our team can look into it. But then I have some individuals like, no. I want to get six properties at 250,000 average each. Uh-huh. You need that $700 a month cash flow just to help balance out my things here. Okay, I'm work with these individuals as well. Now, why I'm saying single family homes is because there, with the specific product that we work, we are looking to the DSR, right? And here, you can look into the DSR and the residentials.
No.
But then, of course, depending on the strategy of each investor.
Yeah, maybe a more multifamily. But in the U.S., then you are not doing... So did you do GPLPs in the U.S.?
On my deal that I got the 40 unit in Cleveland, yes. It's a GPLP structure.
Okay. But you're helping people to... So when you say East Coast, are you talking more like Florida, Texas?
Oh, no. So when you look in the map, right? And then I'm looking down, okay, like the whole... Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus corridor, all the way down.
Okay.
Look into the, even though you can look into the 50 states. Oh, Sandra, I found a house in California. Like, well, sure, but I will not advise you, because buying California, for example, is like buying Toronto. You're gonna go through the same challenges. So why are you doing that? To buy in Toronto, then, right? I try to have that holistic approach to basically, hey, dude, don't do what I did, because you are going to hurt yourself.
It's great. I just want to commend you on, you know, keeping going and recovering from, like, you know, basically you really just expanded too fast and you didn't have your business systems and your everything in place, and you're just doing deal by deal and you're getting your ego fed by saying that you've got another deal closed, and now you've kind of refocused and realized that. So you've really changed your mindset, I would say. And you know, that I just want to commend you on that. That's really amazing. So do you feel like that mindset is important?
Oh my goodness. 1000%. When you have your wife coming to you say, hey, you've been neglecting me for the past 4 years. I'm your maid. I'm out. Then it's like, you know, like my world crashed. I was like, okay, so now that, and how you keep going if you don't have the mindset? And then, but how do I deal with my mindset? I, first of all, I'm a bookworm. Like, I read like crazy. But one thing that I do every day that I'm feeling down, I have a conversation with my future self. And I'm talking to two Sandros. The guy that is succeeding is like, don't give up because things are going to get better. Or if my future self is not giving me advice, I talk to you. They've been there. It's like, Sandro, the storm shall pass. You're going to be okay. Like, just if you have to let go, let it go. You're going to be okay. And I also have a conversation with that guy that didn't succeed, that gave up. And it doesn't look nice. So then it's right. Like, no, I'm not giving up. Giving up is not an option, no matter what.
And so what are the things that do motivate you then?
So I'm motivated now. Wow, I love the question, because actually my wife is asking me, when is going to be enough? It's like, wow, it was enough when I moved to Canada, like 14 years ago, because I got out of Brazil. I came here, learned English, learned French. It was enough. But for me now, is what motivates me is, first of all, two boys. I have a 9 and a 6-year-old. And growing up, and even when I came here, I didn't really find a lot of black dudes like me that are not entertainers, or they're not gangsters and that are successful, right? Because in the hood, you take a kid, it's like the meaning of success, the gangster. But it's like, oh my goodness, I can be a businessman and make a real impact in my community. So I'm focused on social entrepreneurship right now. So the things that I'm doing right now, they must have a social impact, because then when I'm gone, people may not even remember who I am, but the things that I'm doing now, they may have an effect that lasts for generations to come. And this is what gets me out of bed every single morning.
And so what types of things are you doing with
Yeah. Number one, so the speaking. So I became a public speaker. And now I've been invited. So I'm getting contracts with the cities to go speak at schools and associations and then bring this component of financial literacy. And then, of course, real estate is the thing that I talk all the time because there's no color of skin, nothing. It's a much easier conversation to have, number one. Then number two, trying to reposition my portfolio creatively. And some of the things I like painfully have to let it go. But I mean, it is what it is. And then learn through this experience. And then what I do, I register them. And then every Monday morning, for example, in my Facebook and YouTube, I have a power hour that I talk mindset. Like mindset to help me to start my week in a high note. And then through my social media, if you go through my social media, I have a lot of conversations that are related to real estate, mindset, and not motivation, but activation. Because motivation, you got that dopamine. But then once the camera is off, then you're back to the reality. But if you use as an activation, okay, what is the call for action? Get up the bed and look in the mirror. Go to the gym. Go for a walk. Call somebody that you love. Call somebody that you hate or hate you. Have these honest conversations. Eat the frog first. Those are the things that I do in a consistent base that I, you know, will bring me to the next level.
Yeah, that's good, man. I do have to commend you. Like, to not get down is probably difficult at times, you know, especially maybe when it all came crashing, you know, especially at that point in time, right? And so to choose to keep going is commendable. So I hope that you can continue to have successes and push forward, and all the best, and thank you for coming.
Oh man,
yeah. I just have a question about, have you been able to adjust your cash flow situation? Because like, based on what you're telling me and your leverage and looking at some of the lenders that you have, your rates are going to be pretty high. How have you adjusted your, so there's two ways that I've seen. One, you let properties go, and the other is that you start to borrow to be able to pay. And you're going to get yourself into a deeper and deeper hole. And that's what has usually happened to people who end up claiming bankruptcy or, you know, they're in the papers, right?
Yes.
So how have you changed that, like that position, like so that you don't end up like that?
Yeah. So I'm still going through. It's not fully resolved yet. Again, okay. I'm counting my losses, and even projects that I invested the capital that I was making. And I have one rule, is a golden rule for me. I do have some investments that I made that they could solve a lot of my challenges if these individuals, they would pay me. But they're going through what I'm going through. So I am firm when I talk to them, but I talk to them with grace because I know the pain that they're enduring is the same pain that I'm enduring. Now, the people that invest with me, they don't have the same grace, and that's okay, right? Because at the end of the day, one thing that I decided is that I will not pursue anybody in legal matters. And now if they're going to do that, that's a whole different story. But for me, when I look to the portfolio, I'm literally having to make decisions like this. Okay, what are the properties that I can let go the fastest with the lesser impact? Those properties. So then I've been disposing the single family homes. And then the multifamilies, having conversations with the investors. Guys, we didn't lose the property. The property is there. Your money is there. It's just the turnaround is a little longer. But I borrowed against my line of credit. So did I. Now, what do we do? Do you want to replace it with another investor and you have a loss? So we buy you out. So I'm having these conversations. So far, only two guys like, no, buy me out. Pay me a portion of what you gave me. And that's okay. Called quits. And that's why I'm also repositioning the portfolio. Yesterday, somebody came to me. Sandra, I see what you do in the U.S., and I want to do a deal with you. I come with the money. I come with the credit. I come with everything, but I just want you to come along so then I learn with you. And I had to say no. 2 years ago, let's freaking go. But then why I'm saying no? Because even though it's so sweet, he's going to come with all the risk, and I just come with quote-unquote expertise or knowing who to ask, but that is taking out of my focus in solving the challenge that I'm going through. And focus is the most important asset for me right now. To keep going, making sure that I have 50-50 chance, the percent chance here. Things can work out well and I'll be able to recover, or they're going to crash completely. But then let's consider the worst case scenario. Sandra, you're going to lose everything, including your house. Okay. What is the worst case scenario? Well, for me, I would be homeless. My wife and my kids, they can go to my in-laws. I would be in a very difficult predicament. But having this and knowing how to do it, I've learned the traits. I know who to call. I know that my recovery will be faster than if I was just starting.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, that's the power of education and your network. So, you know, two really important things that most people starting out don't understand. It can be helpful, but it can also be hurtful if you're connected with the wrong people and, you know, doing the wrong things at the wrong times, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, I really do commend you for this honest conversation. You know, I've been in every one of those situations that you mentioned on a much smaller scale. And even that is incredibly uncomfortable sometimes, having those conversations with JV partners and, you know, when things aren't going the way that they're supposed to. So on a much smaller scale, I get where you're coming from. But I just want to say thanks for your honesty, you know?
Yes. No, and again, this is not an easy conversation. And this might even come and bite me back on the butt, because you never know how people are going to use the power of social media for the good and for the worse. But for me, it's more like, you know, this is leaving a legacy. I'm using it. It's a painful experience. And maybe somebody watches like, oh my goodness, let me connect to this dude because I'm going the same direction. What can I do differently? Hey, slow your horses. Listen to your wife. Like, number one, listen to your wife. Listen to her gut, her intuition, until it's too late, right? You don't want to get it because it hurts.
Yeah, so, that's I'm a candid conversation, because I know that I know Rob's wife. She's an awesome person, and my wife too. Yes, we have to listen to them more.
We have to listen to them. The wrath is not worth it.
No. But you know what?
But you know, my wife has, you know, a pretty good vision too. And most of the stuff that we get into is at least partly her idea, you know? So, you know, I have to commend her there. Okay. So if people want to reach out to you, Sandro, how can they do that?
Yes. I'm on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, /SandroCanada. I'm also on YouTube at Sandro Canada. So you're going to find Sandro Ferreira there. If you want to hear some great motivation, some honest conversations, sometimes I'm just ranting, like, and I have some rants as well. It's just life, like being honest, open, vulnerable. That's a way that I find having this voice that I will be able to build a legacy that will outlast me. So any social media platform out there, /SandroCanada. Please send me a message, follow me. Let's connect. I would love to further this conversation. If somebody's listening and they're going through some challenges, like, how do I have the mindset? I might be the person that'll be able to give you some tools. So let's connect.
Awesome. And Quentin. Oh, and all that stuff's going to be in the show notes, by the way. So everything that Sandro just said there, if you want to connect with them, go over into the show notes and all those links are going to be right there. Quentin, how can people get in touch with you?
They can go to QuentinDeSouza.com and you can book a 15-minute call with me. We can chat real estate, investing, finances. I'm, you know, that's something I enjoy doing. Or you can go to DurhamREI.ca and, you know, connect with our membership.
Those meetings are amazing. You know, they're the 100% sole reason why I have been able to do what I've been able to do. I'll just lay it on the line there.
Thanks, Rob. How about you? How can people get in touch with you, Rob?
Well, I want people to go over to Hotel Project Costa Rica. By the time this comes out, the hotel should be open, Manta Ray Lodge. So go over to Hotel Project Costa Rica on YouTube and see what we've been doing. And then, you know, hook up with this, come out, have a stay at the hotel, have some fun, enjoy the sun, enjoy the beach. Enjoy the turtle sanctuary that's like a 3-minute walk down the street from us and all of that stuff. So I encourage people to go over and do that. That's number one. And then if you just want to talk to me, it's Rob at MrBreakthrough.ca is my email. Thanks, awesome. Quentin. And thanks, Sandro.
Guys, thank you all, man. I'm so, so honored. Thank you so much for having me here. I know the conversation went in a different direction than what we projected.
Perfect. It's perfect.
I love it. That's how
we
go. So
thank you so much. You guys have a great day.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Guys, I see you at the top.
Yeah, we'll see you again.
Take care.
Take care.